Good evening. My name is Sam Studer, maitre d' of the Fable Lounge. It is my pleasure to welcome you, dear listener, to Fable After Dark, the Nightcap series. Tonight, before your bedtime story, we would like to present you with a cocktail brought to you by a legend of the highest order, Erickson, son of Eric, who has masterminded your nightcap this evening. It is my honor to introduce you to the Emerald Goddess herself, May James, and a gentleman who is Fable's greatest fan, Ben Powell. As they tell you about the pure excitement of Fable Lounge's upcoming events, as well as pairing a cocktail with your bedtime story tonight.
Sam, thank you for that powerful introduction. Good evening, my name is Ben, and it is my special privilege and honor to introduce you to the upcoming events coming soon to a fable near you. The first will be the most powerful of agave tequila tastings on Cinco de Mayo, May 5th, 2022. The second most important event of a lifetime, as for those that know, if you know, you know. As we've navigated through the pandemic paradise, it is the Emerald Bowl. We look forward to you joining us on Saturday, May 14th, 2022. It is my pleasure to present to you, before your bedtime story, May James, the Emerald Goddess herself, as she describes to you, from a legend of the highest order, Erickson, son of Eric's very own, the King's Breakfast.
Good evening, my friends, and welcome to the delectable King's Breakfast. We will start by introducing 2 ounces of Bellmead bourbon. We're going to dash in 6 orange bitters, 2 dashes of the cassia bitters, and then we're going to finish it off with 1/4 ounce of delicious maple syrup. We will stir that to perfection and strain into a rocks glass over a single proprietary cube. To top it all off, some grated cinnamon and an expressed orange peel. Tickle the senses and enjoy.
Thank you, May James, for introducing us to the power of Bellmead, because there's nothing more important than bringing in Bell to the power of your bedtime story, Beauty and the Beast. The pure majesty of taking maple syrup, sweet, like Bell, taking Bellmead bourbon, which dances on a rye forward whiskey that'll melt the sign and destroy the soul. That is the true emulence of never judge a book by its cover, but taste the tantalization of what we're about to become a bedtime story. There once was a very rich merchant who had 6 children, 3 sons and 3 daughters. Being a man of sense, he spared no cost for their education. His daughters were extremely handsome, especially the youngest. When she was little, everyone admired her and called her the Little Beauty. So that as she grew up, she still went by the name of Beauty, which made her sisters very jealous. The youngest, as she was handsomer, was also better than her sisters. The 2 eldest had a great deal of pride because they were rich. They went out every day to parties of pleasure, balls, plays, concerts, and so forth. And they laughed at their youngest sister because she spent a great part of her time in reading books. All at once, the merchant lost his whole fortune, excepting a small country house at a great distance from town, and told his children with tears in his eyes they must go there and work for the living. Poor Beauty at first was sadly grieved at the loss of her fortune.
But,
said she to herself,
were I to cry ever so much, that would not make things better. I must try to make myself happy without a fortune.
When they came to their country house, the merchant and his three sons applied themselves to husbandry and tillage. And Beauty arose at 4 a.m. and made haste to have the house clean and dinner ready for the family. In the beginning, she found it very difficult, for she had not been used to work as a servant. But in less than 2 months, she grew stronger and healthier than ever. After she had done her work, she read, played on the harpsichord, or else sung whilst she spun. On the contrary, her two sisters did not know how to spend their time. They got up at 10 and did nothing but saunter about the whole day, lamenting at the loss of their fine clothes, acquaintances, and parties of pleasures.
"Do but see our youngest sister,"
said they one to the other.
"What a poor, stupid, mean-spirited creature she is to be contented with such an unhappy, dismal situation."
The good merchant was of quite a different opinion. He knew very well that Beauty outshone her sisters, in her person as well as in her mind, and admired her humility and industry. But above all, her humility and patience, for her sisters not only left her all the work of the house, but insulted her every moment of the day. The family had lived for about a year in this style of retirement when the merchant received a letter with an account that a vessel on board in which he had effects had safely and finally arrived. This news had like to have turned the heads of the two eldest daughters, who immediately flattered themselves in hopes of returning to town, for they were quite wary of country life. And when they saw their father ready to set out, they begged him to buy them new gowns, headdresses, ribbons, and all manner of trifles. But Beauty asked for nothing, for she thought to herself that all the money her father was going to receive would scarce be sufficient to purchase everything her sisters wanted.
"What will you have, Beauty?" said her father.
"Since you have the goodness to think of me,"
answered she,
"be so kind to bring me a rose, for none grows hereabouts. They are a kind of rarity."
Not that Beauty cared for a rose, but she asked for something, lest she should seem by her example to condemn her sister's conduct, who had said she did it only to look particular. The good merchant went on his journey, and after a great deal of trouble and pains to no purpose, he came back as poor as before. He was within 30 miles of his own house, thinking on the pleasure he should have in seeing his children again. When going through a large forest, he lost himself. It rained and snowed terribly. The wind was so high that it threw him twice off his horse. And night coming on, he began to apprehend being either starved to death with cold and hunger, or else be devoured by the wolves whom he heard howling all around him. When, on a sudden looking through a long walk of trees, he saw a light at some distance, and going on a little further, perceived it to be a palace illuminated from top to bottom. Walking towards the palace, where he saw no one, but entering into a large hall, he found a good fire and table plentiful set out for no one, one cover laid. As he was wet quite through with the rain and snow, he drew near the fire to dry himself.
"I hope," said the good merchant, "the master of this house or his servants will excuse the liberty I take. I suppose it would not be long before some of them appear."
He waited a considerable time until it struck 11, and still nobody came. At last he was so hungry that he could stay no longer, but took a chicken and ate it in two mouthfuls, trembling all the while. After this, he drank not one, not two, but thrice glasses of wine, and growing more courageous, as what wine does to all, went out of the hall and crossed through several grand apartments with magnificent furniture until he came into a chamber in which he had an exceedingly good bed in it. And as he was very much fatigued, and it was past midnight, he concluded it was the best to shut the door and go to bed. It was 10 the next morning before the merchant waked, and as he was going to rise, he was astonished to see a good suit of clothes in the room. "Certainly," said he, "the palace belongs to some kind fairy who has seen and pitied my distress." He looked through a window, but instead of snow, saw the most delightful arbors interwoven through the most beautifulest of flowers that were ever beheld. He returned to the great hall where he had supped the night before and found some chocolate ready-made on a little table. "Thank you, good Madam Fairy, for being so careful as to provide me a breakfast. I am extremely obliged to you and for all your favors." The good merchant drank his chocolate and then went to look for his horse. But passing through an arbor of roses, he remembered Beauty's request to him and gathered a branch on which were several. Immediately, he heard a great noise and saw such a frightful beast coming towards him that he was ready to faint away. "You are very ungrateful," said the beast to him in a terrible voice. "I have saved your life and receiving you into my castle, and in return, you steal my roses, which I value beyond anything in this universe, but you shall die for it. I give you but a quarter of an hour to prepare yourself and say your prayers." The merchant fell on his knees and lifted up both his hands.
"My lord, I beseech you to forgive me. Indeed, I had no intention to offend in the gathering of roses for one of my daughters who desired me to bring her one."
"My name is not Lord," replied the monster, "but Beast. I don't love compliments, not I. I like people to speak as they think, and I do not imagine I am to be moved by any of your flattering speeches. But you say you've got daughters. I will forgive you on condition that one of them come willingly and suffer for you. Let me have no words, but go about your business, and swear that if your daughter refuses to die in your stead, you will return within 3 months." The merchant had no mind to sacrifice his daughters to the ugly monster, but he thought, in obtaining this respite, he should have the satisfaction of seeing them once more. So he promised, upon oath, he would return, and the beast told him he might set out when he pleased.
"You shall not depart empty-handed. Go back to the room where you lay, and you will see a great empty chest. Fill it with whatever you like best, and I will send it to your home." At the same time, the beast withdrew.
"Well, if I must die, I shall have the comfort, at least, of leaving something to my poor children."
He returned to the bedchamber, and finding a great quantity of broad pieces of gold, he filled the great chest the beast had mentioned, locked it, and afterwards took his horse out of the stable, leaving the palace with as much grief as he had entered it with joy. The horse took one of the roads of the forest, and in a few hours, the good merchant was home. His children came around him, but instead of receiving their embraces with pleasure, he looked on them, and holding up the branch he had in his hands, he burst into tears.
Fair beauty, take these roses.
But little do you think how dear they cost your unhappy father. And then related his fatal adventure. Immediately, the two eldest set upon lamentable outcries and said all manner of ill-natured things to Beauty, who did not cry at all.
Do but see the pride of that little wretch,
said they.
She would not ask for fine clothes as we did, but no, truly, Miss wanted to distinguish herself. So now she will be the death of our poor father, and yet she does not so much as shed a tear. Why should I?
Answered Beauty.
It would be very needless, for my father shall not suffer upon my account. Since the monster will accept one of his daughters, I will deliver myself upon to all his fury. And I am very happy in thinking that my death will save my father's life, as well as be a proof of my tender love for him.
No, sister, that shall not be. We shall go find the monster and either kill him or perish in this attempt, said her three brothers.
Do not imagine any such thing, my sons, said the good merchant. Beast's power is so great that I have no hopes of you overcoming him. I am charmed with Beauty's kind and generous offer, but I cannot yield to it. I am old and have not long to live, so can only lose a few years, which I regret for your sakes alone, my dear children.
Indeed, father,
said Beauty,
you shall not go to the palace without me, and you cannot hinder me from following you.
It was to no purpose at all that they could say. Beauty still insisted in setting out for the fine palace, and her sisters were so delighted at her, for her virtue and amiable qualities made them envious and jealous. True to the beast's word, the treasure was awaiting in the good merchant's room. And on the day of departure, the wicked sisters rubbed their eyes with an onion to force some tears when they parted with their dear sister Belle. Beauty was the only one who did not shed tears at parting because she would not increase their easiness. The good merchant and Beauty took a direct road to the palace, and towards the evening they perceived it illuminated at first. They came into the great hall where they found a table splendidly served up. The merchant had no heart to eat, and Beauty, endeavoring to appear cheerful, sat down to table and helped herself.
Afterwards, Beast surely has a mind to fatten me before he eats me, since he provides such plentiful entertainment.
When they had supped, they heard a great noise, and the merchant, all in tears, bade his poor child farewell, for he thought the beast was coming. Beauty was sadly terrified at this horrid form, but she took courage as well as she could, and the monster having asked her if she came willingly,
Yes,
she said, trembling.
The beast responded, "You are very good, and I am greatly obliged to you. Honest man, go, but never think of coming here again."
"Farewell, Beauty. Farewell, Beast,"
answered he, and immediately the monster withdrew.
"Oh, daughter," said the merchant, embracing Beauty, "I am almost frightened to death. Believe me, you'd better go back and let me stay here."
"No, father,"
said Beauty in a resolute tone.
"You shall set out tomorrow morning and leave me to the care and protection of Providence."
They went to bed and thought they should not close their eyes all night. But scarce were they laid down than they fell fast asleep, and Beauty dreamed of a fine lady. And the lady said to her,
"I'm content, Beauty, with your good will. this good action of yours in giving up your own life to save your father's shall not go unrewarded.
Beauty awoken and told her father her dream. And though it helped to comfort him a little, he could not help crying bitterly when he took leave of his dear child. As soon as he was gone, Beauty sat down in the great hall and fell a crying likewise. But as she was a mistress of a great deal of resolution, she resolved not to be uneasy. The little time she had to live, for she firmly believed that Beast would eat her up that night. However, she thought she might as well walk about until then and view this fine castle. She could not help admiring. It was a delightful, pleasant place, and she was extremely surprised at seeing a door over which was written, Beauty's Apartment. She opened it hastily and was quite dazzled by the magnificence that reigned throughout of it. What chiefly took her attention was a large library, a harpsichord, and several music books.
Well,
she said to herself,
I see they will not let my time hang heavy upon my hands for want of amusement.
Then she reflected,
were I but to stay here a day, there would not have been all these preparations.
The consideration inspired her with fresh courage, and opening the library, she took a book and read these words in letters of gold. Welcome, Beauty. Banish fear. You are queen and mistress here. Speak your wishes. Speak your will. Swift obedience meets them still.
There's nothing I desire so much as to see my poor father and just know what he is doing.
She had no sooner said this when, casting her eyes on a great looking mirror, to her great amazement, she saw her own home, where her father arrived with a very dejected countenance. Her sisters went to meet him, and notwithstanding their endeavors to appear sorrowful, their joy felt for having got rid of their sister was visible in every feature. A moment after, everything disappeared from the looking mirror, and Beauty's apprehensions of the proof of the Beast's compliance. At noon, she found dinner ready, and while at table was entertained with an excellent concert of music, though without seeing anybody. But at night, as she was going to sit down at supper, she heard the noise Beast made and could not help being sadly terrified.
Beauty, will you give me leave to see you sup?
If that is as you please.
No. You alone are mistress here. You need only bid me gone. If my presence is troublesome, and I will immediately withdraw. But tell me, do you not think me very ugly?
Well, that is true. And I will not tell a lie, but I do believe you are very good-natured.
So I am, but besides my ugliness, I have no sense. I know very well that I am a poor, silly, stupid creature.
'Tis no sign of folly to think so. For never did a fool know this, or had so humble a conceit of his own understanding.
Eat then, Beauty, and endeavor to amuse yourself in your palace, for everything here is yours, and I should be very uneasy if you were not happy.
You are very obliging.
Yes. Yes, my heart is good, but still, I am a monster.
There are many that deserve a name more than you, but I prefer you, just as you are, to those who, under a human form, had a treacherous, corrupt, and ungrateful heart.
If I had sense enough,
I would make a fine compliment to thank you, but I am so dull that I can only say that I am greatly obliged to you. Beauty ate a hearty supper and had almost conquered her dread of the monster, but she had liked to have fainted away when he said to her, "Beauty, will you be my wife?" She was some time before she dared to answer, for she was afraid of making him angry if she refused. At last, she said, trembling,
"No, Beast."
Immediately, the poor monster went on a sigh and hissed so frightfully that the whole palace echoed. But Beauty soon recovered her fright, her Beast having said in a mournful voice, "Then, farewell, Beauty." Left the room and only turned back now and then to look at her as he went out. When Beauty was alone, she felt a great deal of compassion for the poor Beast.
"'Tis a thousand pities. Anything so good-natured should be so ugly."
Beauty spent 3 months very contentedly in the palace. Every evening, Beast paid her a visit and talked to her during supper, very rationally, with plain, good, common sense, but never with what the words call wit. Beauty daily discovered some valuable qualifications in the monster, and seeing him so often, had become so accustomed to his deformity that far from dreading the time of his visit, she would often look on her watch to see when it would be 9. For Beast never missed coming at that hour. There was but one thing that gave Beauty any concern, which was that every night, before she went to bed, the monster always asked her if she would be his wife. One day, she said to him,
"Beast, you make me very uneasy. I wish I could consent to marry you, but I am too sincere to make you believe that that will ever happen. I shall always esteem you as a friend. Endeavor to be satisfied with this."
"I must, for alas, I know too well my own misfortune. But then I love you. I love you with the tenderest affection. However, I ought to think myself happy that you will stay here. Promise me never to leave me."
Beauty blushed at these words. She had seen in her looking mirror that her father had pined himself sick for the loss of her, and she longed to see him again.
"I could, indeed, promise never to leave you entirely, but I have so great a desire to see my father that I shall fret to death if you refuse me that satisfaction."
"I had rather die myself than give you the least uneasiness. I will send you to your father. You shall remain with him, and I, poor Beast, will die with grief."
"No, I love you too well to be the cause of your death. I give you my promise to return in a week. You have shown me that my sisters are married and my brothers have gone to army. Only let me stay a week with my father as he is alone."
"You shall be there tomorrow morning. But remember your promise. You need only lay your ring on a table before you go to bed, when you have a mind to come back. Farewell, Beauty."
Beast sighed as usual, bidding her good night, and Beauty went to bed very sad at seeing him so afflicted. When she woke the next morning, she found herself at her father's, and having rung a little bell that was by her bedside, she saw the maid come who the moment she saw her gave a loud, shrill shriek that reminded her of a banshee, at which the good man ran upstairs and thought he should have died with joy to see his dear daughter again. He held her fast locked in his arms for about a quarter of an hour. As soon as the first transports were over, Beauty began to think of rising, and she was afraid that she had no clothes on. But the maid told her that she had just found in the next room a large trunk full of gowns, covered with gold and diamonds. Beauty thanked the good beast for his kind care, and taking one of the plainest of them, she intended to make a present of the others to her sisters. She scarce had said so when the trunk disappeared. Her father told her that the beast insisted on her keeping them herself, and immediately both gowns and trunk came back again. Beauty dressed herself, and in the meantime, they sent to her sisters, who hastened thither with their husbands who they had married during her absence. They were both of them very unhappy. The eldest sister had married a gentleman, extremely handsome indeed, and so fond of his own person that he was full of nothing but his own dear self, and neglected his wife. The second had married a man of wit, but he only made use of it to plague and torment everybody, and his wife most of all. Beauty's sister sickened with envy when they saw her dressed like a princess and more beautiful than ever. Nor could all of her obliging, affectionate behavior stifle her jealousy, which was ready to burst when she told them how happy she was. They went down to the garden to vent in tears.
In what way is this little creature better than us, that she should be so much happier, sister?
Said the eldest.
A thought just strikes my mind. Let us endeavor to detain her above a week, and perhaps the silly monster will be so enraged for breaking her word that he will devour her. Right, sister,
answered the other.
Therefore, we must show her as much kindness as possible.
After they had taken this resolution, they went up and behaved so affectionately to their sister that poor Beauty wept for joy. When the week was expired, they cried and tore their hair and seemed so sorry to part with her that Beauty promised to stay a week longer. In the meantime, Beauty could not help reflecting on herself for the uneasiness that she was likely to cause poor Beast, whom she sincerely loved and really longed to see again. The 10th night she spent in her father's, she dreamed she was at the palace garden and that she saw Beast extended on a grass plot, dying. And in his expiring voice, reproached her with ingratitude. Beauty started out of her sleep and bursting into tears.
Am I not very wicked to act so unkindly to Beast that has studied so much to please me in everything? Is it his fault if he is so ugly and has so little sense? He is kind and good, and that is sufficient. Why did I refuse to marry him? I should be happier with a monster than my sisters are with their husbands. It is neither wit nor a fine person in a husband that makes a woman happy, but virtue, sweetness of temper, and complaisance. And Beast has all these valuable qualifications. It is true, I do not feel the tenderness of affection for him, but I find I have the highest gratitude, esteem, and friendship. I will not make him miserable. Were I to be so ungrateful, I should never forgive myself.
Beauty, having said this, rose, put a ring on the table, and then lay down again. Scarce was she in bed before she fell asleep, and when she awoke the next morning, she was overjoyed to find herself in the Beast's palace. She put on one of her richest suits to please him, and waited for evening with the utmost impatience. At last, the wished-for hour came. The clock struck 9. Yet, no Beast appeared. Beauty then feared she had been the cause of his death. She ran crying and wringing with her hands all about the palace, like one in despair. After having sought for him everywhere, she recollected her dream and flew to the canal in the garden where the stretch of grass laid. There, she found poor Beast stretched out, quite senseless, and as she imagined, dead. She threw herself upon him without any dread, and finding his heart beat still, she fetched some water from the canal and poured it on his head. Beast opened his eyes and said to Beauty,
"You forgot your promise. And I was so afflicted for having lost you that I resolved to starve myself. But since I have the happiness of seeing you once more, I die satisfied."
"No, dear Beast, you must not die. Live to be my husband. From this moment, I give you my hand, and I swear to be none but yours. I thought I had only friendship for you, but the grief I now feel convinces me that I cannot live without you."
Beauty Scarce had pronounced these words when she saw the palace sparkle with light and fireworks, instruments and music. Everything seemed to give notice to some great event, but nothing could fix her attention. She turned to her dear Beast, for whom she trembled with fear. But how great was her surprise. Beast was disappeared, and she saw at her feet one of the loveliest princes that any eye should ever behold, who returned her thanks for having put an end to the charm and which he had so long resembled a Beast. Though this prince was worthy of all her attention, she could not forbear asking where her Beast was. "You see him at your feet," said the prince. "A wicked fairy had condemned me to remain under the shape until a beautiful virgin should consent to marry me. The fairy likewise enjoined me to conceal my understanding. There was only you in the world generous enough to be won by the goodness of my temper. And in offering you my crown, I can't discharge the obligations I have to you." Beauty, agreeably surprised, gave the charming prince her hand to rise. They went together into the palace, and Beauty was overjoyed to find, in the great hall, her father and her whole family, whom the beautiful lady that appeared to her in her dream had conveyed thither.
"Beauty,"
said the lady,
"come and receive the reward of your judicious choice. You have preferred virtue before either wit or beauty. You deserve to find a person in whom all these qualifications are united. You are going to be a great queen. I hope only that the throne will not lessen your virtue or make you forget yourself. As to you, ladies,"
said the fairy to Beauty's two sisters,
"I know your hearts and all the malice they contain. Become two statues, but under this transformation, shall retain your reason. You shall stand before your sister's palace gate and be it your punishment to behold her very happiness. And it will not be in your power to return to your former state until you own your faults. But I am very much afraid that you will always remain statues. Pride, anger, gluttony, and idleness are sometimes conquered. But the conversion of a malicious and envious mind is a kind of miracle.
Immediately, the fairy gave a stroke with her wand, and in a moment, all that were in the hall were transported into the prince's dominions. His subjects received him with joy. He married Beauty and lived with her happily ever after. Cheers and sweet dreams. From all of us here at the Fable Lounge, we hope that you stay healthy, happy, and safe.